Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop from Washington. I'm your host, Mark Levine, reporting live from the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. Of course, we are not just here, but in 40-odd markets across the country. And a special welcome goes out today to WPVC, our newest affiliate in Charlottesville, Virginia. Now, most of you folks know I'm going to be a delegate in Virginia starting January. Yeah, I got to get elected first in November. But having won the Democratic primary, I have no opponent in the general election, so I expect to be serving there. And so it's always great to have a station right in the heart of Virginia listening to a strong progressive message. And the person we have to thank for that is the program director of WPVC, a relatively new station, and someone who felt that Charlottesville needs some progressive radio. I have him on the air with me. His name is Jeff Linerich. Jeff, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Hey, Mark, thanks for having us, and welcome to Charlottesville. I guess with you going into our legislature on January 1, all this becomes your fault now. Is that
Well, can I get a honeymoon a couple weeks first, Jeff, please? I mean, before you blame it all on me?
You know, I tell you, you were trying to make me feel right at home. Your hold music was Dave Matthews, and we, you know, Charlottesville proudly called the Dave Matthews Band our own.
So, oh, really?
I was thinking that's kind of an appropriate time for us.
Actually, I don't. Maybe my producer will tell me. You mean like the stuff you heard behind the scenes? Because my Tuesday
music.
Yeah.
Your hold music from Buffalo. It was great.
So. All right, my hold music, because my main music I know is public domain. I'm very careful about that. So
absolutely.
Fair enough. So tell me this: you are from Charlottesville. You're born and bred. That's your home.
I've been in Charlottesville for 25 years.
That's long enough.
Love it here. It's Paris of the Piedmont. It is our own little slice of heaven in the middle of the Blue Ridge Mountains. And everybody, you know, we have the University of Virginia, which is probably 50 feet from where I'm standing right now. And most of the graduates promised themselves, one day I'll return here to live. And this place is just filled with, you know, people that have gone somewhere else and come back and made this their home, and it's a great place to raise a family. It is probably the best city I've ever been to.
Well, I really like that we have all those university students there, because it's trite to say they are our future, but heck, they are. And the thing is that I find that if you talk to young people when they're in college and teach them progressive values, it can last a long time afterwards. So I really hope, Jeff, you'll build up a big audience among UVA students to progressive radio.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you might have heard we're in the middle of election season down here. And, you know, this weekend I had some UVA students knocking on my door for the local Democratic Party and making sure that it's an off-year election for us. So they were here making sure that we vote. And it really is good to see young people get involved. It's beyond time for the millennials and everyone else to step up and say, hey, what are we going to leave for ourselves? What's next for us?
It is election season in Virginia in November. I have my election up here in Northern Virginia. In Charlottesville, you have the leader of the Democratic Party in the House of Delegates, the guy I'm going to report to, David Toscano. He is your hometown delegate.
David is not only my hometown delegate, but he is my attorney. He's helped me close on a few houses and written a will for me. He's a friend. In fact, I ran into him Sunday at the mall while I was taking my family to the movies. David and his family have been longtime friends, and you know, we are happy to have him represent us. And you know, he's a really approachable guy. And you know, it's not Delegate Descano. It's, hey, David, how you been? And he's like, Jeff, how's your family? So that's pretty much what this town is like. Is everyone really knows each other? And I am happy to now be a part of the media here in Charlottesville.
I tell you, I'm very happy to have met David Toscano. I had never met him prior to winning my primary in June, but I met him soon afterwards. Couldn't be a nicer guy, but also clearly a very savvy guy. We were in Richmond in August dealing with Republicans doing, well, the the craziness they normally do in Richmond. They were trying to get rid of a very capable judge, a justice, really, of the Virginia Supreme Court, appointed by our governor, Terry McAuliffe. They were trying to fight redistricting because they like to gerrymander all the districts in Virginia. Typical Republican stuff. And it was really great to see David Toscano work behind the scenes and do such a terrific job. So I'm a big fan of him.
One of the things I think you don't know about David is he attended Woodstock, the original Woodstock.
Really? Now, I didn't. And he may not want this on the air there in Charlottesville, Jeff. Are you sure this helps him in his election?
it could only help here.
I don't know if you have any pictures of him soaked with mud or anything, or you know, I mean Woodstock, you know.
You know, speaking of the gerrymandering, you know, I ran into, actually David called me on his way back from, because we had some other business to take care of, on his way back from the General Assembly when they went back into special session after the federal court threw out our districts. You know, Virginia is such a blue state now. You know, our two senators are from, are Democrats. Our three of our elected officials are from
governor, lieutenant governor, attorney general. We voted for Obama twice.
They're all Democrats.
Right.
We went for Obama twice, but yet 8 of our 11 representatives in the United States Congress are Republicans.
Well,
how on earth is this possible?
Well, it's possible because, as you well know, Jeff, they took most of the African-American voters all the way from the Richmond area down to Norfolk, a huge swath, 200-mile swath that basically goes along the river for a while. There's a point where that district doesn't take anyone from either side of the river. It just goes down and basically, I guess, takes anyone on a boat, it's not contiguous. Unless you're on that boat, it goes down the middle of the river and basically captures every African American neighborhood in Virginia, and that way Congressman Bobby Scott, who I'm a big fan of and I used to work with in Congress, he gets, I don't know, 80-95% of the vote. But what it does do is it takes all the black community out of the other districts around it and make sure that the Republicans get 55%, enough they need to gerrymander the state. As you say, it's 8-3 in a state that really should be 6-5 Democrats based on our voting patterns. You know, maybe even 6-5 Republicans, but definitely not 8-3.
And the thing I think we really have to be cognizant of with that, in addition to being, you know, underrepresented in the Congress, is that, remember, Pennsylvania and Virginia a little bit, when President Obama got elected last time, they're all like, well, let's proportion our electoral college based on our delegates or our count, you know. So that would
state
go, instead of 13
right.
going for Obama or 15 going for Obama, he would win the state but only get 3 or 4 delegates. And that just can't be. And
yeah.
I think that's one of the games the minority party is going to be playing as their numbers dwindle.
You know, there are a lot of blue states that are heavily red entirely to gerrymandering. In other words, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Florida, three very large states which are solidly blue. Florida, you might argue, is purple, but it voted for Obama twice. Michigan, Pennsylvania, solidly blue states, but because of Republican legislatures, they have overwhelmingly, sometimes 3 out of 4 of their members of Congress are Republicans, solely because of their tricky drawing of the lines. And that's one of the things that I know that David and I both feel needs to be changed in Virginia, just to have fair elections, just to have representative democracy. I don't know why Republicans hate democracy so much. It's basically let everyone have a representative. Republican areas would have their representative. Democratic areas would have theirs. It's not fair to have 8-3 in a state that's basically an indigo state, a purplish blue state. So that's one of the things that we're going to fight.
I'm not telling you anything you don't know, but when our legislatures went back in Virginia, legislators went back in Virginia to try to figure out and fix this, all this illegal lines that they've drawn, the minority party or the majority party in Richmond disbanded them after about 10 minutes. But they couldn't even decide. We can't even decide whether our legislature is still in session or not.
Yeah, well, what happened is we Democrats put forward a plan, and actually our plan couldn't be more fair. It basically takes a congressional delegation, and it has 5 of the 11 districts, 5 of the districts that lean Democratic, 5 of the districts that lean Republican, and 1 district that split right down the middle. It could not be fairer in a state that, frankly, is more blue than red. And, you know, you could argue we should be 6-5 Democrats, but no, we proposed a plan that could not be more fair, and I hope it's approved by the federal court. One thing I want to address with you, Jeff, is why you decided to open up a progressive radio station in Charlottesville. Why did you think it was necessary in the first place?
Well, we have gone, you know, Virginia, like you said, has gone for Barack Obama the past two times, pretty handily. But Charlottesville, Virginia, the numbers are in the 70s, if not in the 80s, where we have voted for Barack Obama. The Republicans have absolutely, while they have a small vocal minority here, they really don't make a whole lot of difference in our local politics. But yet, you turn on radio, you hear the hate talkers, you hear Limbaugh, you hear Hannity, and you hear all these people that just parrot whatever Fox News has on there today, and the same people listen to it, the same 25 people listen to it every day. And we looked at it as sort of a business opportunity as well as something to do for our community. We don't go there yet, but we got the domain wherefactsmatter.com, and we're going to be developing that as sort of our station that's going to be from a factual perspective. And when you're talking to your crazy uncle at Thanksgiving dinner who watches Fox News all day, facts don't matter to him. All he's doing is parroting just these emotional things, these fear-based emotional things that Fox News tells them to do, and we want to push back and give the alternative. What does this really mean? What does Syria mean?
Then we're surprised when Donald Trump or Ben Carson or Carly Fiorina together comprise more than half the Republican electorate. They believe in what we might call magical thinking. In other words, they believe that in a minority they should be able to control the government, or they believe that climate change isn't real, or they believe that that somehow giving tax cuts to super wealthy people somehow trickles down and makes everyone well off. It's this magical thinking that has no basis in fact, but is put on by right-wing talk radio and so forth, and then the Republicans are surprised when they don't want to support Speaker Boehner. They don't want to vote for their conventional candidates, Bush and Rubio. They want these magical thinkers because that's how they've been trained to think.
Well, they have been trained to think that. The magical thinking has permeated its way down. Look at your typical NASCAR fan. NASCAR fans, blue collar. By and large, every blue-collar worker in this country could benefit from what the Democrats have put forward.
Look at Medicaid expansion. They can get health care where they couldn't get it before, and it wouldn't cost them a dime, and the federal government is already providing hundreds of millions of dollars that the Republicans, who claim to be fiscal conservatives, are just ignoring. NASCAR fan gets health care. What's the problem with that?
They have been trained that they have been trained to vote against their own economic and health well-being. And, it may be magical thinking, and it is, but they are so unbelievably effective at delivering that message. And I think that message is fear-based. I think that message is racial. My partner, my business partner in this, Rod Howard, when we first started doing this, Rod's an African-American man, so he was the first FCC license given or awarded to an African American was our station in Charlottesville. So there's no minority representation in the FCC. So when you turn the TV FCC licenses, so when you turn the television and the radio on, you're largely getting corporations or white business owners just telling you how to act.
But Jeff, are you telling me he's the only owner of a radio station in the country that's African American?
No, just locally.
Locally. I didn't think so in the country, in Charlottesville. Locally. Well, I'll tell you what, we got to take a break, Jeff. When we come back, I want to know a little bit behind the scenes, like what it's like to start a radio station. How more difficult is it to do a progressive one? One of the things I've always wondered, and I've been in progressive radio now for 12 years, more than a dozen years, is, we got 40 stations across the country. That's pretty good for progressive radio, but the Rush Limbaughs of the world got 1,000 stations across the country. I kind of like to know behind the scenes how much harder it is to set up a progressive radio station and why that is. Let's take a break. Folks, if you want to join this conversation, give us a call at 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. If you're calling from Charlottesville, you're going to get first priority. So let's hear it out there in Charlottesville. Please join the show. We'll be right back right after this.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded, liberal American. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. Coming up in the second half hour, we're going to preview the Democratic debate tonight, the great battle between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders and three other people not getting 1% in the polls, including our own ex-Virginia Senator Jim Webb. For now, I've got on the air the program director of our newest station, WPVC in Charlottesville, Virginia. Welcome, all of you, whether you go to UVA or not. We're very glad to have you join us. I am your host, Mark Levine. This is the Inside Scoop. Jeff, I wanted to ask you, behind the scenes, is it really hard to set up a radio station? Is it harder if you're progressive than if you're conservative?
As an eternal optimist, I'll tell you the easiest thing first. The easiest thing was navigating the Federal Communications Commission. They had rules that were in place. They hit their timelines. I made my application. I had questions, I called, and on the day they said they would let me know, they let me know. So the FCC really did a nice job. The hardest part, other than the sort of the technical aspect of sourcing all the gear, you know, we're on eBay and Craigslist and, you know, scavenging, you know, Goodwill for monitors. We're really trying to do this on a budget. There's two difficult things. One is board operations. We're trying to train individuals, largely progressive-minded individuals, some of whom have since retired from their first career, to come in and operate the board, because as your producer has probably told you, radio hosts don't always hit their marks, you know, for hard breaks. So where most radio stations have automation systems where they can just sit there, nobody has to be there. They just put in a stork system and the music plays and no one has to be there. But for us, we have to have a person in the chair every time, all the time we're on the air. So training individuals to sit there and do the hardcore.
It's funny. I've been doing this for more than 12 years. It just comes natural to me. But no, I remember when I learned. So it is something. Tell me this. We only got, like, speaking of hard breaks, okay, we only got a couple minutes left. Answer the question, is it tougher to do a progressive station than a conservative station, and why?
Well, it's the hardest. I don't know necessarily the answer to that, because not being a conservative, but that's the hardest thing for me has been to say no. Because so many people have come forward with such fantastic ideas. And, you know, my default always was, yeah, we can do that, yeah, we can do that. But eventually you just run out of time, run out of ability. And to say, I just can't do that, and to see the disappointment in someone who really, really has a good idea, but I just don't have the bandwidth to do that right now, you know, disappointing people who genuinely have a good voice and really, really deserve to be heard. We're one small station and one small market, and we just can't do everything.
I'll tell you something, Jeff.
Has been the hardest thing.
One of the things I've noticed, and I've been to radio conventions and all that for years, is that there is a conservative bench. In other words, the conservatives pay a lot of money. They give a lot of money to progressive radio. They support it. They bring in new people, and conservatives understand that putting a lot of money into radio is a good idea. You can talk to people in a very one-on-one way. You can listen. It's not just the sound bites of television. And I hope progressives learn the value of progressive radio. I wish you every luck there in Charlottesville. I am honored and pleased to be on your station, and I hope to be here for many years to come. Thank you, Jeff, for coming here on the Inside Scoop.
We look forward to a visit, so we'll talk to you soon.
All right, folks, if you want to call in, we're going to move on and talk about the Democratic debate. It is Hillary Clinton versus Bernie Sanders and three others. 888-488-MARK. Give me a call right back after this.
When conservatives attack, Mark Levine is ready, Constitution in hand. And here's our favorite lawyer now.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. We've seen two Republican debates. Now America will have its attention drawn to the Democratic debate that's going to be on CNN tonight at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Now, the Republican debate has featured lots of histrionics, Lots of excitement. Donald Trump has been insulting everybody. He basically called Carly Fiorina ugly and Rand Paul short. And I don't remember all his. He called Jeb Bush lacking in energy. It's hard to remember all his insults, including the ones he gives to the hosts, like Megyn Kelly. I suspect the Democratic debate will be substantive. The main two people running for the nomination, Hillary Rodham Clinton and Bernie Sanders, will be going after each other on policy. And the other three, I got to say, most people don't even know their names. Martin O'Malley, Jim Webb, and the guy in Rhode Island. I can't even remember his name. Lincoln Chafee is his name. They're all less than 1% in the polls. It's basically Sanders v. Clinton. And I just think it'll be good for America to see that the Democrats at least care about substance, care about policy. It may be more boring, friends. I can't deny it. You know, when you study good science, it's more boring. Science fiction is fascinating. When you watch a real medical procedure, it's boring, whereas Frankenstein's a lot more interesting. Well, friends, real politics, real governing is kind of dry, kind of technical. So I will give the fireworks to the Republicans. I will give the substance to the Democrats. To help discuss the debate tonight, I have invited a perennial here on the Inside Scoop, Professor Julian Zelizer. He's a political historian at Princeton University, a New America Foundation Fellow, and his recent book is called The Fierce Urgency of Now, Lyndon Johnson Congress and the Battle for the Great Society. Professor Zelizer, welcome back to the Inside Scoop.
Thanks for having me.
So let me just start with my intro and ask if you agree that the Democrats will be more focused on substance while the Republicans are all attacking each other.
For sure. I mean, I think this group of Democrats lacks anyone like Donald Trump or Ben Carson. And if anything, it's going to go in the opposite direction. You know, Bernie Sanders is something of a policy wonk. So is Hillary Clinton. So I think they're going to, you know, dive deeper into the policy muck rather than focusing on the Trump-like attacks.
Is there a risk that boring the American voter, even if they show intellect, even if they show great discussions of policy, the kind of things that make wonks like you and I really happy, is there a fear that they're going to bore the ordinary American voter who might want to watch the fireworks of a Donald Trump? Sure, he can't do half of what he says he's going to do, but he sure is funny. Is it possible that people vote based not on policy, but on entertainment value?
Well, they certainly watch debates that way, and I think that's what Donald Trump understands so well. I mean, when he makes these kinds of statements, when he makes these kinds of controversial attacks, he understands that's what attracts viewers. This is his apprentice-style politics. And so it's possible people tune in and just watch a little bit, and without those kinds of fireworks, you know, by the end of the first half hour, they've tuned off.
So, Professor, it attracts viewers, no doubt. Does it attract votes? In the polls, Trump is way ahead, and Carly Fiorina, and even someone as, frankly, wacko, and I don't use that word very often, as Ben Carson, they're way up in the polls. Now, I don't know whether people just want to see more of them and are just telling the pollster that, and then when Iowa and New Hampshire all start, they look at Bush and Rubio and Christie, or whether they're actually going to get some votes from this thing.
Yeah, look, I don't think right now it's clear if this will translate into votes, and it's very possible that the same kind of debate tonight, which might be a little more boring to people, actually wins votes in the long term. Right now, not a single vote has been taken. We're still months away from that, and I think a lot of the people being polled are reacting to the television quality of some of these candidates. So I do think in a couple months, voters might be looking more seriously at who could be someone in charge of governing, someone who could get the nation through some of the problems that we face, and it's not clear Donald Trump will still be standing. So it's way too early to read anything into these polls as being an indicator of what's going to happen in the, you know, first six or seven primaries.
So the main two, of course, are Bernie and Hillary, Clinton and Sanders, And what is it that they mostly disagree on? I mean, they agree probably on 80-90% of things, don't they?
Absolutely. There's not huge policy differences. Some will come up tonight. We'll hear about the vote on Iraq, where Sanders will go after her the same way Barack Obama did in 2008 for being on the wrong side of that issue. But then it will be more...
One thing on that real quick. I mean, that's a fair point, but the vote is more than 10 years ago. Is there a statute of limitations on this? I mean, she made a wrong vote in 2002. Again, I think it was wrong, solidly wrong. But, you know, she lost to Obama because of it in 08. It's now 2015. Are we past this?
I think we are. We're still going to hear it. It's a symbolic issue, and it's a way to gauge someone's judgment. So we will hear about it. I don't know how much traction it will have. You know, I think what Sanders is obviously going to go for is to suggest that a lot of what Hillary Clinton argues might be right on paper, but she'll never do it in office, that she's too tied to big money, she's too tied to the existing political process to make the kinds of changes on issues like inequality that both are calling for, while Hillary Clinton will make the argument that he's just too far left to be elected, and in some ways it's a wasted vote to support him. So who could achieve the goals, and, you know, how far they'll go rather than fundamental differences.
In one of his recent appearances, I believe on Meet the Press, Bernie Sanders was asked a very good question, and that was, well, okay, you have these great ideas, but Barack Obama, who I don't think the questioner said this, but we all know is to the right of Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders is certainly to the left of Barack Obama. If President Obama could not get through a Republican Congress some of his progressive ideals, what makes you think that you, who's far to the left of Barack Obama, will get through any of your ideals? And I got to say, Bernie Sanders gave a surprisingly honest answer. He basically said, I won't. Unless we get a more Democratic Congress, I won't achieve what I'm trying to do. That's the truth. I was kind of surprised he said it.
That is the truth. And, you know, that's always the danger with candidates who promise big things. You know, the political system rarely supports that. There's only a few moments when those bursts of legislation happen. And he's right. And I think the battle is as much for the White House as it is for Congress. And we see all the chaos right now among House Republicans. And I think some Democrats are wondering whether they'll be able to take advantage of this and at least diminish the size of the Republican majority in the House and even make a play for the Senate. But that's as important as who does best in this debate. Otherwise, all the promises in the world are going to result in absolutely nothing from either Democrat.
Now, Bernie Sanders certainly runs to the left of Hillary, although we concede that 85-90% of what they support is the same. And he's winning a lot of the white liberal progressive vote. Hillary Clinton, for reasons that I'd love to know why you think this is true, she still has solidly big parts of the Democratic coalition, the African-American vote, the Latino vote. She's got, obviously, you can see why women would support her. But why is it that she's winning blacks and Latinos, non-whites, so much more than Bernie Sanders?
Well, you know, part of it is there's evidence African-American voters think well of President Bill Clinton, and some of this support might still be benefiting her. I do think there's...
Don't white voters think well of President Bill Clinton? White Democrats?
No.
Really?
You know, I think they like him. They don't all like his policies. And I think she's trying to distinguish herself that way. And, you know, there's something to she is a historic candidate in the same way that President Obama was. And so I think that means something to various groups in terms of the symbolic nature of the victory. And I think there's many Democrats who feel the stakes are too high right now to risk a vote on someone who probably couldn't win the general election in their mind. And so I'm sure there's many African-Americans thinking about that, that she gives them a better chance of achieving the policies they need and desire.
Julian, there are three other candidates on the stage. None of them poll higher than 1%. In the Republican debate, if you don't poll 1%, you got relegated to the kiddie table debate. In other words, if you didn't get 1%, you were put out there in non-prime time, five or six, three or four, seven. You know, there are different numbers because people dropped out. But the main candidates got all the time. Given that Hillary Clinton's got, you know, 50-some-odd percent or whatever, and Bernie's got 40-some-odd percent, and the other three, None of them have even 1%. Is there an argument to be made that they really shouldn't even be in the debate at all?
Well, you know, it's better to have people in the debate because often they have ideas that matter to the party. We don't have the numbers we have in the Republican debate tonight, so it's not 17 people. So you can afford to have people with smaller polling and have them participate but not overtake the whole debate. But there is an argument in terms of consistency, in terms of why you do it with one party but not the others. But I tend to think it's good to have more voices at this point. This isn't the presidential debate. It's a primary debate. So, you know, let the voices yell and scream, and let's hear what they have to say.
I think my ex-Senator Jim Webb in Virginia has completely thrown himself out of this race. His discussion of the Confederate flag, frankly, to me was weird. I'll just be nice and put it that way. Lincoln Chafee, people don't even know his name. Could Martin O'Malley, could he be the one that actually comes out of the kiddie table and joins the big two?
Well, before Bernie Sanders came about, he was the one who was considered the strongest possible challenger to Clinton and a serious candidate. So I do think he can be appealing. He speaks about a lot of issues, including gun control, that might put Sanders in a very uncomfortable place. Sanders doesn't have a very good record on that. So
yeah, Vermont's a very rural state.
I think he's the one to keep an eye on.
I think he is, too. I think Webb and Chafee should drop out. But Martin O'Malley may still have a chance to rise. We'll find out. Professor Zelizer, thank you for joining us here on the Inside Scoop and giving us the look tonight. I want to take your calls on the Democratic debate. What do you think is going to happen tonight? 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back right after this.
He's a Harvard economist and a Yale lawyer. He does not keep up with the Kardashians. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. The first Democratic presidential debate is tonight on CNN at 8:30, moderated by Anderson Cooper. It'll be quite a change from the antics of the Republican debate. I expect it to be on policy. I don't expect people to be attacking each other with insults. I think it's going to bore America to tears. And that's what we want, isn't it? I mean, in the big battle between Gore and Bush in 2000, Gore won the election, but everyone was afraid. You see, I don't know if you saw that Saturday Night Live 15 years ago, but Gore was seen as someone boringly efficient. Yeah, the country ran on time. Yeah, inflation went down. Yeah, unemployment was low. Yeah, everyone was better off, but he talked like a computer. And people had that choice, or they had the ex-cocaine addict, the ex-alcoholic, the guy who could say anything and couldn't even mispronounce English. George W. Bush, you have to admit, was far more exciting. He has more personality than Al Gore. He ruined the country, but if it's personality you want, you would have picked W. And I worry about America. I hope we care about boring efficiency more than we care about drama, but I do worry about America. We'll see how they react to the Democratic debate tonight. Let's go to William in New Mexico on line one. Hey, William, how are you?
By golly, you know, I'm old enough to remember the old bumper stickers, ABC, anybody but Clinton.
That was a long time ago.
Those guys have a lot of baggage. And the only baggage I can recall on Joe Biden is I do believe that he's the one who sponsored and pushed the non-forgiveness part of student loans.
You know what? I don't even remember that. I don't remember. Oh, maybe because he's from Delaware, Banks. Maybe so. The one thing that they always talk about Joe Biden is that back in the 80s, when he ran for president in the 1980s, he basically said without attribution a speech given by a British Labour Party leader. He didn't attribute it, and they accused him of plagiarism. That was the big thing. Talk about a 30-year-old thing. And I just don't think that has any legs today. But I'll tell you, I don't think Joe Biden's going to enter the race.
Hopefully that's true.
But I don't think he's going to enter the race. I like Joe Biden. I've always liked Joe Biden. I've liked him for decades now. But,
I'm a Bernie guy. I'm a Bernie guy.
Yeah, Biden. I'm just going to say about Biden real quick. Before you talk about Bernie, real quick, William. Before you go into Bernie, let me just say this. I don't think Biden will enter the race because, one, he's 72 years old. But more importantly, he just lost his son, the wonderful Beau Biden. And I don't think he's got the intestinal fortitude.
He knows his stuff.
He does. I just don't think he's going to run. All right, let's talk about Bernie. He's your fan. Tell me why. Why do you like Bernie Sanders?
I love the guy. He's the real deal.
Let me ask you this. I know you're in New Mexico. You've got a southern accent. Bernie Sanders is the consummate New Yorker, right? I mean, I know he represents Vermont, but he's a Jewish guy
from
Brooklyn.
I'm from South Carolina.
Okay, and this is a Jewish guy from Brooklyn who sounds it. Tell me why culturally you think Bernie Sanders will play in a place like South Carolina, because I'm worried about that. I'm a Jewish guy myself, but I'm worried that a Brooklyn Jewish accent could play in a place like South Carolina.
Amigo, I cannot tell you. I grew up, I was born in 1950. I went through segregation when Jews were treated like Negroes, and it was awful. That's why I moved to New Mexico.
But help me out.
As soon as the draft was over, so I stayed. I graduated from Clemson. The reason I graduated from Clemson was to stay out of the draft. The day I graduated, I moved to New Mexico.
William, I understand why Southerners culturally can vote for Bill Clinton. I understand why Southerners culturally can even vote for Hillary Clinton. She's not quite a Southerner, but she's more one than Bernie Sanders. Could Southerners culturally vote for a socialist from Vermont?
Well, they voted for Fritz Hollins, and
But he was a South Carolinian. He was a Democrat. He had a genteel nature. I'm worried culturally for Bernie. Seriously, I'm worried about. Maybe it's unfair to appeal to other people's prejudices.
Maybe I shouldn't do that. Bernie's not going to get any votes out of the Confederacy. Are you kidding me?
Okay. All right.
I mean, who's fooling who here? Dude?
Well, but that's my point. That's my point. I mean,
that ain't going to happen.
But do you think he can win?
Will not vote for Bernie.
Can Bernie Sanders win the nomination? Can he win the presidency? My question is, can Bernie Sanders win the nomination and the presidency?
I mean, you see, the fact of the matter is, regardless of who wins the Democratic nomination, there is not one Confederate state that will vote for the president.
Florida. We can get Florida. We've gotten Florida in the past. That's the one the one southern state that's not that southern. we have won Florida on occasion in the past. William, let me tell you something. I'm glad Bernie's there. I think he's raising some really important questions. I'm glad he's pushing Hillary to the left. I'm glad he's there. I am still skeptical that this is someone who can win the nomination or the presidency, but that doesn't mean that I'm not glad he's there. I'm glad he's there. I think he'd make a great Secretary of Labor. I would love to see him rebuild the unions under President Hillary Clinton. I'm just not willing to suspend disbelief enough to think that he could actually win the nomination. But
you can that's a pipe dream. Rebuilding unions, that's not going to happen. Throughout the Southwest, I mean, the Southwest is right to work. That's a pipe.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's what I fear about Bernie Sanders. That he's a great guy, full of pipe dreams, things that are possible in Norway and Denmark. I wish him well, and I wish him well in convincing other Americans to support the ideas that he supports. Thanks for your call, William. I appreciate you sharing it with us. call in again sometime. Reggie from Georgia, longtime caller. We only got a little bit of time left, Reggie. I'm sorry, but go ahead. Give me your point on line two.
Well, happy Tuesday to you, Mark.
And, happy Tuesday.
If I was running this debate, I would switch out Brian Kilmeade with Shepard Smith from Fox.
Well, but this is CNN.
And I would add Rachel Maddow into the collective mix.
Okay, this is CNN. This is Anderson Cooper. It's not a Fox debate. There may be one coming up in the future, but I think Anderson Cooper will be pretty fair. I think he's actually pretty good at these things. Thank you, Reggie. Sorry we ran out of time. Folks, we are going to be talking about the debate in detail tomorrow. Who did well? Who did not do well? What did you think about Bernie versus Hillary? This will be your chance to weigh in tomorrow on the Inside Scoop. Don't miss it. This is Mark Levine signing off.